Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast,
where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media.
I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Hey, everyone. It's Mario Carrasco, New Mainstream Podcast. Really excited to have our guest today, Will Campbell, co-founder and CEO of Quantasy. We've been working together quite a bit these past couple of years in the Black Consumer Project and working mainly with my co-founder, Roy. But glad to have him on the podcast today. Welcome, Will.
Hey, thank you, Mario. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Before we dive in, talk a little bit about the work we've done together and your thoughts on state of the industry in general. Would love to learn more about your entrepreneurial journey. I mean, I typically, like I mentioned before the podcast, I'm talking to executives and executives typically. So when I get a founder, co-founder on, I always like to hear about this story, being a founder myself.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. So, you know, I came out of college and sort of took the normal get out of college, get a job, and I went to work for a Fidelity title. But I always had like entrepreneurial dreams. I always had an entrepreneurial spirit. And so I'll give you the short version. But through some relationships that I had, I was able to kind of get a foot in the door in the entertainment business. And at the time, there was not a lot of digital marketing taking place in the entertainment business. And I was really intrigued by technology and content. And this was like, you know, early 2000s. And so we started, my partner and I started to kind of like apply that thinking to the entertainment business for artists and record companies and building websites and creating content and doing online tour merchandise and things like that and creating MySpace pages. And these things hadn't typically been in the toolbox for marketers. And so we had, interestingly, a ton of success working with artists, some really big name artists and record companies from RCA to Interscope and others. And so we sort of had a space that we carved out. Shortly after, larger brands started to see the benefit of digital marketing as well as entertainment marketing. And so brands started to want to work with artists and entertainment influencers and do things in the digital space. And we had some years head start. And so we were kind of positioned as experts and had some great opportunities to work with some really great agencies, as well as work directly with some brands. So we started off effectively as a digital agency. The more digital became kind of the centerpiece for reaching, you know, what would become millennials at the time, which was the hot ticket. The more the work that we did became centered at these organizations, and we started to kind of expand from there into taking our ideas that were kind of rooted in the digital space and expand them into broadcast and events. And so we kind of became a full service agency from the ground up versus from the top down. We kind of started in digital and expanded into full service. So that was really exciting. Having the background in entertainment always placed us kind of at the center of culture. You know, those worlds are very connected, from music to fashion to cars to, you know, art, you name it. So we were always built on that foundation. And then just through my lived experience as a Black entrepreneur and my business partner's lived experience as a Filipino Asian entrepreneur, we have always been rooted in culture. It it's almost like unintentional, because it's just how we see the world. It's who we are. And the choices that we made kind of attracted similar thinking and talent. And so we built this amazing, what I feel very fortunate to have created, this amazing network of people that work with us now. And it's more than just a company, it's a community for us. And, you know, we have the fortune to bring our services to some of the best brands in the world. And so here we are today. Since building and growing the company, we've acquired another multicultural agency, a legacy shop called Muse Communications, which was one of the pioneer shops in multicultural marketing.
And today we're remember that. Yeah.
No. And so that's where we are today. And that's kind of how we got here. And, you know, we are thrilled to be continuing to do the work that we do and partnering with folks like you, and continuing to push culture in the right direction.
Yeah, that's incredible. And congrats. I mean, it sounds like, you know, what's interesting about your story is that you started in digital, right? The focus being kind of early days to social marketing and entertainment, and the focus on culture or multicultural diversity kind of came, well, just part and parcel, like you mentioned, from your lived experience. But the marrying of that, you obviously came at it at an opportune time, right? And obviously with the authenticity, that's amazing. And I think, I you know, doing the math and doing the research here, I think when we did the work, I know I was looking at some of the broadcasts we did for the Black Consumer Project. I think at the time I was 11 years. So the agency now you're at, is it like year 13 roughly, if I'm doing the math right?
Yeah. So we're founded in 2011. And so we're like right at about 13 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. We're 2000. We're 13 as well. So 2011. Sure. And I mean, so like looking at the numbers, right? If most businesses in general, I think over 50% never make it to year 10, you know, especially those with co-founders. And then, you know, double clicking, I don't even think there really is data of agencies, multi-million dollar owned by, you know, Black, Brown, Asian founders. Like, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to you as a Black founder?
I mean, you know, it's twofold. You know, and on one hand, it's we're proud of the growth. We're proud of what we've been able to do, and the people that work for us at Quantasy that have put us in these positions, and the clients who have supported us and believed that we can help them and have benefited from that. So it's exciting for us to kind of be leaders in the industry, one of a handful, to your point. I think it also is somewhat disappointing that there aren't more. You know, when you think about the number of agencies that are in the country and even globally that are, you know, working with clients and helping clients in any number of spaces, from marketing, advertising, digital, strategy, research, creative, you name it. And to not see more Black and Brown or diverse owned companies, that's something that the industry needs to try to help change, because there are many, many, many brilliant, creative, entrepreneurial minds out there that can offer so much to our industry. And so I think, you know, collective effort to see more diversity owned businesses thriving is important.
Agreed. And I, you know, this is a good segue into the Black Consumer Project. One of my favorite data points was how important entrepreneurship was among the Black community. And what I love about the project, and those who are not familiar that are listening in, this is the first time hearing about the Black Consumer Project. This is a project that Quantasy led, that Think Now supported, that really drilled down, and it was a multi-wave, multi-year project where we drilled down into the Black consumer in the U.S. We realized that there wasn't a lot of data out there highlighting the contributions of Black Americans, ranging from topics of the American dream, values, things about entrepreneurship, and how important that was. I think we're seeing more research on the Latino and Latina side about entrepreneurship, but to see that reflected in the Black community, one of my favorite data points was this idea of the Black American dream that came out of that. I know you took part in a lot of the fireside chats we had around the data. Like, what were some of your favorite data points coming out of the Black Consumer Project that we did?
Yeah, I mean, Black Consumer Project is definitely one of my favorite things in the building that we worked on and continue to work on. I love what you're talking about just in terms of entrepreneurship and creators and creativity and how Black consumers are really leaders in that space. You know, one of the areas that is very important to me was the health and wellness wave. So my mother was a mental health nurse when she worked for her career. And so the idea of mental health and wellness is something that's always kind of been in the background for me, something that's always been there for me. And what was interesting to me, and now in this world where mental health and wellness has become very, very topical, and while it's something that's been around for, you know, literally thousands of years, but, you know, more recently, it's something that's been around for decades. It's now kind of having this like inflection point, this sort of like trending, if you will, and being heavily, heavily capitalized in a lot of ways. But for me, one of the insights that stuck out to me in terms of the Black Consumer Project was the fact that Black women, above all, saw mental health as being very, very important and a critical piece of your overall health. And so that was good to see. In some ways, it was validating things that I know, because my mother was a Black woman, is a Black woman, who has always kind of kept this top of mind. But on the flip side, it was that there were only 4 out of 10 that actually knew what to do about mental health. So I thought that was really eye-opening, that, you know, you've got this huge constituency of Black women that know and are aware and are thinking like, hey, mental health is important to my overall health, but on the flip side, I don't know where to find out how to do it. I don't have the tools or the resources. It's important to me, but I don't know where to go. And so I thought that that was really, really interesting. Alongside that, you might be aware that we work on a platform called True Voice, which is a mindfulness and wellness app in network that we've built to really address this exact type of issue. But yeah, I just think that delta in terms of this insight that, you know, Black women really interested in knowing about mental health and aware of how serious it is, but are unable to learn how to really implement it because the tools and resources aren't available.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And that's something that's mental health close to my heart as well. So my wife, my partner, she's a mental health, she's a doctor. She has her in mental health. And so, and she's passionate about bringing mental health awareness to diverse communities. I wonder, this isn't something that we research, but anecdotally, right, at least in the US, I think for Black and brown communities, mental health doesn't seem like that's something that's accessible and for us. I wonder if that's playing into it, right? Like there aren't a lot of resources out there that are culturally resonant that connect in that way. Because if we look at the mental health practice in the US, it was created and developed with a very particular consumer in mind. So I think that's fantastic. You all have a resource out there that's like True Voice that's culturally sensitive to that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the space is yet another space, another market that's, you know, overlooking this community. And, you know, so filling that gap, I think, is really, really important. What we're doing at True Voice is meant to be, you know, broadly inclusive. So it's not geared toward, you know, one specific group or ethnicity or gender or anything like that. It's really meant to be inclusive. But what you find is most of the products that are in the marketplace, and this is not to place shame on anyone. Everybody has their own business models. But when you think about the Calms and the Headspaces of the world, they're just not designed to be inclusive in that way. And oftentimes when people think about bringing a lens of diversity, it's through celebrity or through some sort of casting or even, you know, the voiceovers, but it doesn't get into the subcontext of what the cultural uniqueness and needs are that need to be addressed, of the realities of these communities that also need support and tools in the mental health space. And so that's what we're here to help correct.
And I want to dive into a little bit that you're talking about authenticity, and I've heard you speak on it a couple times. I love your perspective on it, but I want you to share for our audience, like, what is that secret sauce for Quantasy in terms of being able to authentically connect with the diverse consumer base that your clients are trying to connect with? What does authenticity mean for your perspective and for
Quantasy? Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of key ways to think about what we do at Quantasy. On the one hand, for me, the definition of authenticity is really about honesty and being real and being true. No matter what kind of brand you are, the way to best be authentic is just to show up as who you are. Now, we're all on a journey and we all have aspirations, even as companies and businesses and things we want to do better and different and change. But we live in a world where consumers really want to know and understand who you really are. And so that's what authenticity means to me. For us at Quantasy, the way that we help brands think about building their businesses is really about building bridges and bringing worlds together. In all honesty, it's in our name. Quantasy comes from quantum fantasy, which is kind of science and imagination and bringing these worlds together. And our business started, as we talked about, by melding these worlds of entertainment, technology, marketing, you know, many, many years ago. So we've seen the power of bringing worlds together. Those worlds could be via ethnicity. They could be via interest. Those worlds could be backgrounds. Those worlds could be career, you know, you name it. But it's really about, how do we bring worlds together? How do we kind of meld different perspectives? And I think that's what culture is at its heart. That's how culture is bred at its heart. It's when people come together and perspectives and new things come out of that. And so it's kind of inherent to who we are and how we think.
I this is the first time I hear about the story of the Quantasy name. I love that. It's a great representation of what you all do, right? Like, that's great. And changing gears a little bit, touching on diversity, we've talking about bringing worlds together. We've seen a little bit of a backlash so far about from this diversity. I mean, I think we've been running our companies for 13 years, so we've seen, you know, our mission and vision hasn't changed, but we saw really great growth and awareness about issues of diversity and inclusion after 2020, after the murder of George Floyd. But I feel like this past year, something's changed. There's been a little bit of a backlash on a lot of these initiatives that we saw companies making public promises, and now seeing a backlash. What's your thought on that? We did a little bit of research that we haven't released on it yet, but that I'll share with you. But I wanted to get kind of your opinion on that backlash. Is the backlash louder than reality? Like what are you seeing in the market?
You know, I think that the backlash that we see comes from different places. And I'm more interested, I think, when it comes to this topic, in understanding what trepidation brands have when it comes to DEI efforts. Because I've seen and heard reasons and rationale and excuses from across the board. And I think the key to combating it is really around education. And so, as a for instance, oftentimes and historically, people have seen DEI as at odds with business goals. And they've kind of put it in this like corporate social responsibility category. And so now, when companies are under immense pressure to make shareholders happy or to drive their businesses forward, they see it as kind of a tug of war. When the truth is, a more inclusive business that has a more inclusive approach to staffing and team members and a more inclusive approach to the consumer market is going to be a healthier, more successful business in the long run. You probably know this very, very well. In the last 10 years, more than 100% of the population growth has been driven by multicultural markets. So Black, African-American, Hispanic, Latinx, Asian, Native American, Indigenous, Pacific Islander, you know, that is where the population growth is. That is who will be our customers going forward. And so I say that to say that sometimes this backlash may come from an economic perspective when you're dealing with some of the companies that don't want to make the investments into these things. I think there's also some systemic good versus evil at play, where, you know, sometimes it's as clear as right and wrong. And it's important that, you know, the right voices are in the rooms and standing up to make the right decisions around things. So more than I think about, like, what's my kind of personal opinion on the backlash, I really more take a step ahead and say, like, okay, what's happening? Why is this happening? And what needs to happen? And where can the education be seeded so that, you know, this backlash can be counteracted?
Agreed. And I think your point really resonates with me about DE&I sitting outside of business or the C-suite, and that being a mistake because it's core to growth. I mean, I didn't ask a specific question. This was before this whole quote unquote backlash, but we had the head of insights for Target on, and he was talking about, I was asking him about the importance of diversity at Target. And he made such a good point that I think about to this day, about how when Target thinks about their consumer, they're thinking about the people that work at their stores on the ground level, and how can their marketing reflect the people that are working for them at the stores. I thought that was so powerful, right? Because they're bringing it back, mm-hmm. not only to their employees, but realizing that they're part of a community, and those the people working at the stores, if they can't reflect them and get them into the doors to be customers, like, how are they going to get anyone that outside of that, you know? And they really think about, to your point, it's a business imperative. It's not a nice to have, regardless of how you feel on a personal level, right? From a good and evil. I personally believe it's a good and right thing to do, but it's also a business imperative.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's smart business. It's necessary for growth.
Yeah. So I mean, to that point, thinking about the future, right? 100% of the growth in this country is coming from Black consumers, Latino, Asian, both. And this is not just immigration we're talking about. We're talking about births as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, looking ahead, what do you see as the future of multicultural marketing? If you had to make some predictions, what does that look like? I feel like you've touched a little bit on that. You mentioned how Quantasy is about connecting two worlds. Maybe that's ethnicity. Maybe that's generation. Maybe that's background. I like that. I like that concept. Yeah, if you had to make some bets, what do you see the future of multicultural marketing?
You know, I see the future of multicultural marketing is just marketing. And for anyone who wants to grow a business, and anyone who wants to invest in marketing, it will need to be multicultural at its core to be successful. I think that more and more digital media, the outcome of the pandemic has accelerated us tremendously, in that now any business in very short term can be global. And so when you're thinking about the global opportunity, it will inherently require you to understand cultures in different ways. So I think that the success, and just because there are so many businesses that are bullish on multicultural and understand that, and there are so many businesses that see the value in it, you will need to leverage multicultural as a core part of your strategy just to compete. And so that is, you know, I think really where the future is taking us.
I love that quote. You know, the future of multicultural marketing is marketing. That's great. That's the episode name there. What are some innovations that you're excited about in as a business owner, as a marketer? I can tell you for us, AI is already disrupting our industry. There's some interesting things that we're playing around with. What are some trends and innovations that you see interesting that you're looking into as a business owner?
I mean, I think to your point, you know, you guys at Think Now, you guys are similarly ahead of the game because you're already looking out at what's happening next and what's coming. Which of course made you such a great partner for us. And so I would say similarly, you know, AI is, if you're not thinking about AI, you're not thinking about your future. And so I think that's an important area that's definitely top of mind. But one of our big priorities as well is wellness. And you know, again, the idea of mindfulness dates back ages, you know, thousands of years. But it's actually, you know, a very, very important and relevant kind of rediscovery today. And so I think as people have kind of reappraised what's important, I think when you think about, you know, this recent Surgeon General's warning about what loneliness is doing to us and the increasing rates of, you know, suicide and occurrences of depression and anxiety, I think it's critical that, you know, wellness is addressed and people have the tools and resources to do that. And I think brands would serve themselves very well by understanding that and by finding out how they can add value to their consumer markets through that lens, because it's going to be very, very topical. So in similar ways that we've seen over the last however many years, you know, brands are thinking like, oh, sports is a connection point, even if their product has nothing to do with sports, or oh, music is a connection point, even if their product has nothing to do with music. I think the wellness space is one of those frontier connection points that is going to be very, very big in the future.
I really like that, because I think for me, it's easy for me to get caught up on what's the next thing. And I think about technology. Your point about wellness is so salient, right? Because the world changes and evolves and technological innovations happen. But at the end of the day, we're human. That's not going to go away, right? And core things like community, being around people, wellness are so core to who we are that we forget it in this hype cycle. So this idea, and sports is community, right, at the end of the day. Wellness is so big, and it's interesting to hear you talk about it in the context of like sports brand. You know, I wonder, what does that future look like with brands interacting with wellness, or even like Qantas is doing, enabling wellness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, when you think about wellness and well-being, it's such a vast space. It's such a lifestyle opportunity, as people have become more than ever encouraged to kind of become their best selves. We've seen this disruption around, you know, just the grind or working the job that you don't like, or, you know, any number of things that have caused stress. It's important that we're resilient as people, for sure. But I think that people are kind of taking control back of being subjected to conditions that are harmful. And, you know, for many people, it's not just like, oh, I'm overworked. It's like people are really suffering from real mental health problems, you know, that they're not able to just solve for themselves. It's not people that are just like stressing themselves out, you know. These are real cases of trauma that's been unaddressed over generations, and any number of causes. And so I think that there are huge opportunities, from nutrition to apparel to mobility to technology to you name it, brands in any of these categories, to understand that this is an important path for consumers to be on and to find those intersections.
Do you think this trend, and it makes me think of this younger generations, I mean, Gen Z, millennials a little bit, but this whole non-alc trend, like, do you think that's part of that, where there's kind of a movement, right, to hang out without alcohol? Yeah. And you see a whole new category of mocktails and liquid death. It's just water that looks like a beer can. Does that play into the wellness category? Is that kind of a manifestation of it?
I think absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, with these kind of like non-alcoholic or, you know, very low alcohol content, I think is becoming big. There's a phrase out there, you've probably heard of it, called sober curious, where, you know, people, largely Gen Z, are kind of considering like, what is life like? How can I have fun if I'm just sober? Do I have to put, you know, more toxins into my body to enjoy myself? And I think that that's a bit, a lot of that is driven about around personal well-being, you know, for sure. And in a lot of cases, it's not about like completely eliminating, you know, alcohol, but it's about, you know, maybe reducing it. It's about, you know, less often. It's about like, you know, why do I put myself through the hangover? Or, you know, I still want to go and hang out. Why do I have to feel pressured to have a drink? You know, if I go to the bar and order a Coke, am I going to be made fun of? You know, so it's people that, you know, I think the mocktail, the non-alcoholic, I think a lot of it is like, and this idea around sober curious is around like, hey, how can I still have fun, whether I'm with people that drink or not? But yeah, it's kind of like pursuant to my overall health and well-being.
For sure. Yeah, no, there's a whole, podcast and all that, blowing up on wellness. I think about like Huberman, just focused on wellness. And, that's interesting. Believe it or not, we're almost at our time. I have a couple more questions before we sign off here. Reflecting on your body of work, you have a lot to draw from being in business over a decade. Is there a particular project that you're most proud of, and why?
Yeah, I think you know where I'm gonna go with this one.
I did it.
True voice work is really important for us right now. One, because it's homegrown. It's something that we've put together. Driven by Melanie, who, you know, our head of strategy, who's just done a phenomenal job with helping us get on the surface of this, and a really great team of people that are working alongside her. But the True Voice app is something that we're really, really passionate about. We see the opportunity for it to make change from the business side of things and what we do as a firm to just what's needed in culture to our ultimate mission of pushing culture in the right direction by building brands. And so that would probably be one that I'm just super excited about right now.
And what, like, if listeners want to find out more, what's the URL for that project, or where can we find out more?
Yeah, you can go to truevoiceapp.com, or you can just search for True Voice in the App Store on iOS or Android.
And then final question, for aspiring entrepreneurs, especially those from underrepresented backgrounds, what's some advice that you would offer based on your experience in building and running Quantasy?
Yeah, I think that the advice I would offer is think big, start small, and get after it. Take the steps you can take. Know that you have a big vision. Know where you're trying to get to. Work backward from there and take the steps that you have to take. Do what you can every day to push that vision forward. Stop second guessing it. You can always change. You can always pivot. But, you know, we live in a world where speed is critical. And so it's make moves, make decisions, and go.
Love that. Well, thanks for joining us, Will. It was awesome talking to you. Appreciate all the knowledge you've shared. Don't forget, check out Quantasy and look at the great work that they're doing. Can you remind me of the URL if people want to look at Quantasy and where to find you online?
Sure, Quantasy.com.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com. and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.